The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merritt, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk New York here on WGBB in Merritt, Long Island, New York. I am Bill Donahue here. I'm taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night. It's the 14th day of April, 2024. Our engineer, Brian Graves, is across the way as always, and we've got a special show lined up for you tonight. In the leadoff spot, we'll welcome in two-time world champion New York Knicks forward, former senator from New Jersey, Senator Bill Bradley, will grace our airwaves. And in the second half, we'll talk to former Major League Baseball umpire Tom Hallion. He'll be with us, so sit back, relax, get comfy, enjoy the show tonight. We got some great people with some great stories ahead. Before we begin, as always, I invite you to follow me on Facebook. My page is called The Talk of New York Sports. There you'll find sports information, show information, so much more. You can also follow me on X at B Donahue, WGBB. And if you miss a show, don't worry about it because they're all out on the website the next day and you can catch up anytime you want to. Well, our first guest, to me, he epitomizes the idea of a life well lived. He grew up in a small town on the Mississippi River in Missouri where he really worked on perfecting his craft. He went on to Princeton. A Rhodes Scholarship led to Oxford. He was drafted by the New York Knicks where he was part of the great two teams that won two world championships. He then entered the political arena serving three terms as the senator from New Jersey. That led to a run for the presidency and on to a successful career in the financial world. He has a wonderful one-man show on film that you can stream right now from Max. It's called Rolling Along. I am proud to welcome tonight to Sports Talk New York, Senator Bill Bradley. Senator, good evening.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm doing great, Senator. I want to ask you right off, back in Crystal City, your boyhood idol was not a basketball player.
No. Well, my boyhood idol was Stan the Man Musial. I used to, he had a specific kind of batting stance. And I was a right-handed hitter, so I couldn't mimic him. But in the show, I did do a mimic of Stan the Man.
Yeah, he sort of recoiled like a Springfield rifle.
He did, yeah.
Now, you say in the film, Senator, that you begin by bouncing a ball. How did this project begin?
Well, I gave my papers to, my political papers to Princeton University. They did an oral history and interviewed about 60 people. I invited them to a reception.
Veterans.
40 showed up. I told stories about each of the 40, one of whom was a friend of 50 years who had produced 72 plays on Broadway. And afterwards, he came up and said, you know all those stories? Sound a little bit like Hal Holbrook doing Mark Twain. You ought to work something up. And so that kind of caught my imagination. I spent the next year writing it, spent another year on the road workshopping it in 20 different cities across the country, then memorized it, walking around Central Park, and did it four nights with five cameras in the December of 2021, and it's now a film on Max.
It's really a great job, and the film is essentially it's really about all of us, Senator, right? It's an American
really
story.
We did a focus group, and the guy said, you know, people from all over the country, and he asked them, what do you think this is about? And one person said, it's about all of us. Other person said, it's about love of the game. It's about love of the country. It's about forgiveness. It's about perseverance. It's about sadness and joy and loss and triumph. In other words, it's about life. And I thought they caught it pretty well.
So an amazing career from Princeton to Oxford to the Garden to Washington. And here you are. You're on the stage by yourself.
That's right. Yeah. But when I was in the room off the stage, about ready to go out the first night, do it. I had to memorize about an hour and 50 minutes at that point. And I actually analogized like I was in the locker room about ready to go out on Madison Square Garden and play.
Same thing.
And just same kind of concentration,
yeah.
Get ready. Then the game time came, and we had the warm-up song was Louis Armstrong's Wonderful Life. And when that finished, I walked out on the stage and did it.
Nice. That's the way to do it. Now, what do you hope to accomplish by doing Rolling Along, Senator?
Well, Bill, I hope that it might lead to some healing in a very divided country because I wanted to tell my story with great candor and encourage other people to tell their stories. And all of our stories is the American story. And I think that what underlays this presentation is my common humanity, and if all of us, it'd be our common humanity as a country. That's really what we share as Americans. I mean, the politics is divisive, but we do share our common humanity, and we need to celebrate that. And that's what I hope to do in the show and encourage others to tell their stories.
Outstanding. We're speaking tonight with Senator Bill Bradley. Now, legacy, Senator, so important to so many people. What would you like people to say about you? Now you're entering into your eighth decade. What would you like people to say about you at this point?
Well, I'd like them to say that I was a good father.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number one thing. I have a daughter. I hope that I've been a good father over all these years.
Very nice. Very nice. Now, if you did win the White House back when you ran, what do you think you'd be doing these days?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I would have been out of the White House about 15 years. I don't know what I'd be doing.
It's, I know. It's tough to say.
I think it's probably unlikely I'd be have done this one-man show, that's for sure.
As you said, your proudest accomplishment is your daughter. And for the kids listening in, Senator, how much did discipline have to do with all your success?
It was absolutely essential. I had a mother who was extremely disciplinarian. Her father was very much a disciplinarian. She's a chip off the old block. But so early on, I had to practice the piano. I had to do my homework. I had to do these things. But I think that the discipline really was the most important moment for doing the discipline was when I was about 14 years old. I went to Easy Ed McCauley's basketball camp.
Uh-huh.
And he told the assembled campers, remember, if you're not practicing, somebody somewhere is practicing. And if you two meet given roughly equal ability, he is going to win.
Wow.
And so that's the origin of my workaholism. I never wanted to lose because I didn't practice. And so it ended up being 3 hours a day on weekdays, 5 hours on Saturday, all throughout my high school years and my early college years.
Very powerful message from Mr. McCauley there, I have to say. That really can get kids moving. That is great incentive. Now,
But I applied it to the same. I applied it in all aspects of my life. I remember
did.
When I arrived in the U.S. Senate, I was on the Finance Committee. First day I was on the Finance Committee, the discussion was the multilateral trade talks, the Tokyo Round. And I literally sat in the room, and I did not understand one word that was said. And after about another 5 or 6 years, I was kind of the committee expert on trade, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And only got that because every day I applied myself, and I learned it and learned it and learned it, just like I learned to play the show. So walking around Central Park, saying it over and over and over and over.
Nobody would look at anybody talking to themselves in Central Park, though. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not worried about people looking at me, but it was, I would get to a certain point in the walk, and I knew I had to be at this place in the show, and that, then another place in the walk, and I had to be toward the end of the show, that kind of thing. But another thing that happened, Bill, that I've been so lucky in my life, and this was another example. The angels appeared along the way as I was doing this. The first angel, of course, was the friend who told me, this sounds like Hal Holbrook during Mark Twain. You ought to work something up. That was one angel.
Mm-hmm.
Another was I was in and that when I was doing it 20 cities around the country, I did one read at the commissary on the Warner Brothers lot in L.A., and afterwards a guy named Mike Tolan, who'd done The Last Dance about Michael Jordan, came up and said, you know, this could be a film. And then one day I ran into my buddy Spike Lee in the Walt Frazier's restaurant, and I told him about this, and he said, well, come on over and do it for me in my office. So I go over to his office, and he says, well, what do you need? And I said, how about a glass of water and a stool? And so I did it for him, and at the end he had tears in his eyes. And so I knew I thought I had something. And then, you know, after I'd memorized it, I had to do it every day. I had to practice every day at 3:30 in the rec room of the apartment building I live in New York. I would do the show, and it kind of got around. And so 2 people came, 10 people came, 4 people came. And one day a guy comes, and he listens to the show, and he says, you know, I'd like to help you with this. His name was Frank Oz, who did all of the Muppets and all the Jim Henson movies. And my last angel along the way was 2 weeks before the Tribeca Film Festival, and I was debuting. That was my premiere. And I began the show with a song by Van Morrison called Let the Healing Begin. And 2 weeks before the beginning of Tribeca, his agent called and said, sorry, Van no longer gives you permission to use the song.
Ooh.
So what am I going to do? I call my buddy Steve Van Zandt.
Nice.
Of the E Street Band, and say, what do you got any ideas? He said, yeah, well, Bruce wrote a song in the early 80s called Summer at Signal Hill. That might work. And so I played it, and it did. So he came to the rescue.
Beautiful. Steve Van Zandt, Miami Steve. It's
right.
Great to be able to have him on speed dial, Senator, and to give him a ring. Senator Bill Bradley with us tonight on the program. Now, a continuing theme in Rolling Along, which is available on Max Focus Streaming. You could see it. You could take a look at it right after the show. Never look down on people you don't understand.
Yeah.
Your grandmother.
That's what my grandmother used to say. And that line appears at 3 places in the show. And to me, that's the one sentence of the show. You know, at the end, I talk about, you know, we live in a divided country. And maybe we could learn from what made the NIC teams great so many years ago. And that's take responsibility for yourself, respect your fellow human being, disagree with them openly, honestly, civilly, enjoy their humanity, and never look down on people you don't understand. That's the message of the film.
It certainly is, and you expound upon that beautifully in Rolling Along. Well, Dollar Bill, let's hit the hardwood now. I'm going to call you Dollar, like we
Why
do
not?
In the show.
Why not? I'm Dollar to a few people anyway, still.
Now, we talk about the coach, another Hall of Famer, the great Red Holtzman. You mentioned that he had 3 specific instructions.
Right.
Hit the open man, help out on D, and the hotel bar belongs to me.
That's exactly right. Those were his 3. Very simple.
That is wonderful. Now, of your teammates, and it was you could tell a team that had gelled already, that everybody knew each other very well. We have Willis, the captain. Tell us, Senator, or Dollar, tell us how it felt to be on the court the night at the Garden before Game 7 when Willis comes out, accompanied by Danny Whalen, comes out of the runway.
Sure.
What do you think right away?
Well, the team is all in the locker room.
Uh-huh.
Willis got hurt in the 5th game. He did not play the 6th game when we went to L.A. and Will Chamberlain scored 40 points. We lost by 20.
Yeah.
So in the locker room, the question is, will Willis play or not? And when we go out to the warm-ups, he's on the training table, and none of us really know whether he's going to play. Now, DeBuscher said he asked him, and Willis said, I will play. But I didn't know that. So I'm just warming up, taking practice shots. And suddenly there's a rumble. And it gets louder and louder. And I see Willis walk out. And he walks over and takes a couple of practice shots. And the crowd is just, the roof is coming off. And the game begins. And one of the first times down, he's about 17 feet right behind the foul line, and Will's hanging under the basket, so he shoots and makes it.
Right.
And about 4 shots, 4 times down the floor again, he makes a second shot, and at that point, I thought the Garden was going to explode. We were all inspired by his sacrifice for his teammates, and Walt Frazier went on to have the best seventh game in the history of basketball, of the NBA. I mean, he had like 36 points and must have 19 assists and 14 rebounds, and he and the rest of us played well.
Yeah.
And we won the championship.
What a tremendous Game 7 that was. I used to listen to the transistor radio in the bedroom like so many other kids.
Yeah. Like you and a lot of other people caught it under their pillow.
Listening to Marv with every fiber of my being. Now, Dave DeBuscher, the muscle under the basket. I mean, you had to play Jack Maron. He had to go against Gus Johnson, guys like that. Willis had Wesley Unseld. Dave DeBuscher meant a lot to you.
Dave was like my older brother. We were roommates for 6 years. That's where you really get to know somebody. And he was a great basketball player, totally unselfish, great defender and rebounder, could hit the open shot. And he was really one of the stalwarts of that team. And when he came from Detroit, that was one of the key moves that the Garden made to put together the championship team.
Yeah, came from Detroit for Howie Colmives, folks. And you don't have to Google that. I'll let you know. Now, Dick Barnett, who as you depict in the show, experiences his racism in the South. He's going to join you in Springfield this year. A great man with a great left-hand
so
jumper.
I am so happy
that
he has been named to the Hall of Fame. I've been talking with him. I actually wrote a letter for him on this round, and he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. It is a big thing for him, as it is for anybody, mm-hmm. but particularly for him, since his journey has been so long and so arduous and so full of setbacks and yet some triumphs, too. And he was a great player. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and I'm very pleased that he is now.
Dick Barnett, folks, one of the starting five on the 1970 New York Knicks championship team. I want to talk to you a second, Bill, about the Minutemen, as they were called. I read all the books as a kid, Miracle on 33rd Street, and there seemed to be some characters among the Minutemen. For one, I remember Nate Bowman was a pretty funny guy. Is that true?
Yeah, Nate Bowman was the backup center.
Right.
And he didn't play a lot, and he had ability, but not great ability. But he was a positive force in the locker room, always funny. And then the others, of course, were Cassie, Russell, and Dave Stallworth, and then Mike Reardon.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys came in, and they energized. When they came in, the team did not let down. It actually sometimes took off.
Yeah, they were great ball players in their own right, those guys. And some of them made good careers for themselves in the expansion draft. And Mike Reardon went on to the Bullets, and he had a stellar career there. Now, we talked a little earlier, Dollar Bill, about the battles that you had with the Baltimore Bullets and the Boston Celtics. Who was the toughest guy you had to guard? Who gave you fits?
The toughest guy that I had to guard was John Havlicek of the Celtics. And the reason that was so was he was constantly moving. And if he had a half a step on me and his hand was outstretched and mine could only get to his elbow, the ball, his teammates would give him the ball, it would hit his hand. So he'd have half a step and the basket. And so he was extremely difficult to, tremendous competitor, great defender, and he was the toughest guy I had to guard. I had great battles with Jack Maron of mm-hmm. the Baltimore Bullets, but Havlicek was much more difficult.
What a wonderful Hall of Famer Hondo Havlicek was, and you could Google that name, folks, and what a career he had. We're speaking to Senator Bill Bradley tonight on Sports Talk New York. Now, musically, you like Chuck Berry, Bill, and he stumped for you, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. As a matter of fact, that was a big moment for me in the presidential run when I did a thing in St. Louis and Chuck Berry was on the card and played his songs. You know, he was one of, when I was about 10 years old, my mother took me and one other person to my first rock and roll concert in St. Louis at Kiel Auditorium, 10,000 people. And it had Fats Domino, Jerry Lee Lewis, the Everly Brothers, and, of course, Chuck Berry, St. Louis's own Chuck Berry.
Nice. That must have been some show. Now, you listen to those guys. Who did you like when you were in the 70s? So what kind of music did you listen to then?
Well, I listen. I'm eclectic. I listen to a lot of different kinds of music. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was always a big Dylan fan. I was always a big Beatles fan. I was always a big fan of country western music, too.
Yeah, eclectic indeed, Bill. That is for sure. Now, what do you have, anything cooking besides Moving Along? And we'll talk about Moving Along again in a moment. Anything on the horizon for Senator Bill Bradley?
Well, I have a radio show on Sirius XM called American Voices, and I've done that for 16 years. We have over 1,400 interviews and 480 shows. And it's with people, just regular people. I have two kinds of interviews. One with somebody who's doing something special in their community, like a guy that shines shoes at the Pittsburgh Children's Hospital for 46 years, and out of every tip, he put a portion of that tip into a fund to pay for poor kids' health care.
Wow.
Those kind of interviews. And then people have unusual jobs, like a woman that goes into the Everglades and catches pythons, which she then sells. And then sometimes I have interviews with people I just want to talk to, whether it's Paul Volcker or George Shultz, Secretary of State, or Bonnie Raitt, or whomever. And so I'll continue to do that, and I look forward to doing it every week. It's on Sirius 124 at about at noon every week.
How about your movie career? Can we expect you to see you on the big screen again anytime soon, maybe with Anne Margaret or somebody like that?
No, I don't think so. I think this is my one time on the screen.
Gotcha. Well, Senator, it's been a real honor and a pleasure. We thank you for taking time out of your Sunday evening to spend it with us out here on Long Island. I want to tell the folks again, Rolling Along, go to Max. Just search Bill Bradley or Rolling Along. It's a great watch. It's funny. It's sad. It's touching. And it has a very important message for all of us. If you remember one thing, folks, from tonight, start your Monday morning tomorrow. Don't look down on people you don't understand. With that, Bill, we'll wish you a good night and thank you again for coming on.
Bill, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time you've given me, and I love your show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Senator. That's Senator Bill Bradley, folks. Up next on Sports Talk New York, we will welcome in former Major League Baseball umpire Tom Hallion. Stick around, folks.
Listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
Always wait for the drums, folks. You got to wait for the drums, right, Brian? When the drums kick in, that's your cue. Well, we are back with Sports Talk New York here on WGBB in Merrick, Long Island, New York. I'd like to thank you guys for stopping by, hanging with us for a while tonight. What a thrill that was for me to talk to Senator Bill Bradley, a hero of my youth with the New York Knickerbockers. Of course, went on from Princeton to be a Rhodes Scholar. From there to Madison Square Garden, where he really was the great white hope on the Knickerbockers. to a lot of people. And a three-term United States senator from the state of New Jersey and opposed Al Gore for president. I forget what year that was. Brian doesn't know either, but take my word for it. Well, I enjoyed that. A hero of my youth, another one, I'll chalk that up. Our next guest, he's a former Major League Baseball umpire who wore number 20 on his sleeve. He worked 3 All-Star games, 9 Division Series, 5 League Championship Series, and 2 World Series. He was chosen to work the 2006 World Baseball Classic. The man hails from Saugerties, upstate New York, in the beautiful Hudson Valley. I welcome to Sports Talk to New York tonight, Tom Hellion. Tom, good evening.
Good evening, Bill. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. I'm glad you could be with us, Tom. I thank you so much.
I have to tell you, I'm sorry I missed your interview with Bill because, just like you, he was my hero listening to Knicks basketball.
On the transistor radio, listening to Marv Albert, right, Tom? Yeah.
You got it.
I told him that, too. If you want to listen, it should be up on the website. I'll send you the link to listen to it tomorrow or the next day. This way you can see how I did, because I was nervous as all hell. Now, growing up in Ulster County up there, who were your sports heroes when you were a kid, besides Bill Bradley?
Well, baseball, I went right to the top, and Mickey Mantle was my hero, which, you know, I just joined, you know, the million other kids that looked up to Mickey, and that was a huge deal when my dad would take me down to Yankee Stadium, and we would get to see a game, and if we were lucky, Mickey was playing, and we got to see him play.
Yeah, I know that during the end there, it was touch and go with a lot of games if you were looking for the Mick. Now, your family really has deep roots in Saugerties. I was looking. Your dad was a councilman. My wife and I enjoy Saugerties because we like the Diamond Mills. You know the Diamond Mills?
Sure I do.
Yeah, we love that place. We get up as much as we can. The beautiful rooms overlook the waterfall of the Esopus, and really a beautiful place.
It really is nice. I guess that's, you know, probably now, I'm guessing, 10 to 15 years old, but they have done a great job on it. They've that used to be a mill, mm-hmm. and I remember being a little kid, and it caught on fire, and that was huge because everybody came and kind of watched the burning of the building.
Wow!
But they've done a great job turning it into the Diamond Mill.
Oh, they certainly have. It's kind of expensive, but when we can, we get up there. Now, you went to the UB, University of Buffalo. How'd you end up in Kentucky?
Well, I was in the minor leagues, and I got promoted to AAA. And I was still living in New York, had gotten married to my lovely wife, Betsy. And when I got promoted to AAA, it was the American Association, which was kind of the Midwest teams. And they had Louisville, Kentucky, Evansville, Indiana, and Indianapolis, Indiana. So I figured if I lived in one of those cities, I could commute the other two, and I'd be home, you know, at least 3 cities that my schedule had me in. Mm-hmm. So we picked Louisville, and it was a great move because we were only planning on staying here for 2 years and then heading back to the East Coast once I found out if I was going to make it to the big leagues or which league was going to take me. So
gotcha.
They kind of threw me a curveball. I was planning on going to the, you know, all the talk, all the whispers was that I was going to the American League. So I thought, you know what, Boston, New York, that's perfect. I'll maybe someplace in Connecticut, someplace, somewhere in between there, that would work out great. But then the National League wound up buying my contract, and then I could commute up to Cincinnati, which was, it's about an hour and 15 minutes away. So that was good, and, you know, 42 years later, we're still here.
Yeah, and you're doing well, which is great. Now, what started you out on the road to umpiring, Tom?
Well, I was going to the University of Buffalo studying engineering, and you know, I kind of had 2 years in and said, I'm not really quite sure if this is what I want to do for a career and everything. So that summer I was home and I worked at the cement plant as a laborer, which, you know, we made great money. But then in the evening I started umpiring some softball games. And, you know, it was just something about umpiring, even though it was softball, it was something about, you know, this is, you know, every play, every pitch, you know, you got a new challenge. And anyhow, it was something that I really liked. And I wrote away to find out about umpire school. And I saved up some money and off I went to Florida. So and then I was fortunate enough to make it into professional baseball and work my way up through the minor leagues.
Good story. Tom Hallion with us tonight on Sports Talk New York. Now, you started out in the New York Penn League, which we know well because the Brooklyn Cyclones were part of the now defunct New York Penn League. What players or managers did you meet in your minor league days, Tom, that you ran into again in the bigs?
Well, let's see. I guess some of the big names, Daryl Strawberry, had him in the minor leagues. I was trying to think who else. I had a lot, you know, Louisville was the Cardinals. They are now the Reds. But so all those guys, Vince Coleman and Willie McGee, and I'm trying to think of some of the others. But I had a lot of the Cardinals that made it to the big leagues right here in Louisville. So yeah. I got to know them pretty well.
Did you have Doc Gooden at all, Tom? Doc Gooden?
You know what? I did not have him. I kind of missed him. I was in the big leagues when he was going through the minor leagues, and then when he got up to the big leagues, I certainly had my share of Doc's pitching, but I didn't have him in the minor leagues.
Because
I missed that.
The Mets retired his number today.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they retired his number 16, so his number 16 is up in the rafters at Citi Field, which he really deserves. Now, I want to ask you about the union issue, where you left baseball and you got hired back in 2005. What happened with you guys then?
Well, we had it's a long story, but I'll try to condense it into a minute or so.
Sure.
We had had a lot of things going on. The league was trying to merge the umpiring staff, so it wasn't a National League staff and an American League staff. They wanted to combine both staffs together. The National League was a stronger staff, so they figured if we merged with the American League guys, it would make an overall better umpiring crew. And that was, you know, change is not liked by many, and the umpires certainly didn't want to do that. So there were some things that happened that year, and in umpiring, you know, I had an incident with Jim Leland and the who was he managing at the time? I guess the Pirates. But anyhow, you know, that I was kind of the center point of that. I got fined, you know, like $500 or something. But they wanted to get the Major League Baseball to the negotiating table because our contract was up at the end of that year. But what baseball was saying was, well, we don't know who you have to talk with because the American League is getting rid of their league president and the National League is getting rid of their league president. So you can't talk to anybody else. So anyhow, they came up with a strategy that we would all resign September 1st or 2nd, and then we would get them to the bargaining table. Well, that went defunct because a lot of the American League umpires folded, and they rescinded their resignation. And then once you had that happen, it was a shit show. I was one of the 22 that got caught up in the actual, you know, they accepted 22 resignations, and I was one of them, unfortunately.
Got you. Yeah, that is very unfortunate. Now, I want to ask you about the situation in 2013. You were fined by Major League Baseball for supposedly swearing at David Price, but it seems to me, Tom, that that's part of life on the field. I don't get it. Were you guys held to a certain code of conduct?
Well, what happened there was, you know, first of all, I will tell you, I never paid the fine because they kind of knew that the union was going to fight them on it. And what happened was I told Price to just throw the effing ball.
Right.
And that's what they fined me on because I swore at him.
Yeah.
But there was nothing that said we couldn't swear. We always had to stay above the player. But when you get into a heated argument, you know, that type of language, unfortunately, is used all the time.
Right.
So what happened was Price and Michael Moore, I believe the other pitcher, they went to the internet and, you know, they just destroyed me, with social media. And so they got fined for using social media, which they were not allowed to do in their basic agreement. And, it was just a normal type argument. But then what happened was, Price said I called him a cuss word, you know, a mother,
right,
blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, if he said that, he's lying. Well, when I said that, then the league took exception to that because I wasn't supposed to call a ball player a liar. But if I didn't say it and he says I said it, then, well, it kind of makes sense that somebody's lying.
Yeah.
But I don't, you know, it was me telling the reporter. I said, look at it, you know, I have nothing against David. If he says that, he's lying because I didn't say that to him.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, that's what it was. It was an argument over, I guess, words that maybe got taken out of context. And, you know, I didn't talk with David Price for about 3 years. And then when he got traded around, he was with the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. And, you know, they had picked him up for their pennant drive and right before the trade deadline.
Right, I remember.
And it was late September. The season was almost over. And there was a second baseman, a young kid, Barney, that played second base for the Blue Jays. And so he comes, and I had first base. So he comes running out. He goes, Tom, don't look at me and don't look in the dugout. But after we're done talking, I want you to look in the dugout because David Price wants to apologize. And he says, it's over. We're done. So from that point on, you know, I did see him. And, you know, I said, hey, David, you know what? You got... You know, you really came after me, so I just put up my shield, and that's why I've never said a word to you. But, you know, it's just one of those things on baseball. It happens on the field, and, you know, sometimes it gets taken out of context. But,
sure.
You know, I ended my career, you know, as him, as a friend and not an enemy. So that
good.
Was good.
That's good. Very good. We're speaking with umpire Tom Halley and tonight on Sports Talk New York. Now, you are known, Tom, for your really demonstrative strikeout call when you punch somebody out. How did you develop that?
Well, with the failed union strategy, I lost my job. And then a couple years later, I had the opportunity to go back to the minor leagues. And to keep my sanity, I had to come up with something that I could do that, you know, would keep my mind in the game. And what I decided was I wanted to do something different than anybody else in baseball that nobody else did. I wanted to kind of come up with something that I could keep my head straight and on and you know, be kind of sort of interested in what I was doing in the minor leagues. And That's how I started it down there, and then brought it up when I did come back to the big leagues. I brought it with me, and it was a little shaky at the first couple years, but then it kind of took on a life of its own. And obviously, that's what I'm known for, and one of the things I'm known for, I guess. But
that's good,
yeah,
though.
It was fun. Most players enjoyed it. Most players really liked it. I'm trying to think of his name now here. Milky Cabrera.
Yeah,
he played with the Yankees for a while.
Yeah.
He absolutely loved it. So we would walk onto the field, and he would see it's our crew, and he'd start, you know, over there in the dugout trying to do my strike three call. But, yeah, he loved it. Most of the guys loved it. You know, they took it all in stride. And, you know, I had a couple of them early when I first came up, back up, and, had to tell them, hey, listen, this is nothing to do with you. This is just me trying to, you know, I come up with this strike three call, and that's all it is. I'm not trying to show you up. I'm not trying to do anything except call a strike three like I want to develop.
So, add a little color to the game, Tom. And did you ever see that kid in the stands that he takes the best of everybody? The kid dresses up completely like an umpire and makes every call that the home plate umpire does, and he's really great.
Yeah, he is, and I did see him, and he's kind of fun to watch. He gets into it, and he really enjoyed the umpiring world. You know, we don't have that many friends in the umpiring world, so when you had somebody that kind of liked what you did, it was nice.
Throughout history, it's been the enemy of fan and player alike, unfortunately. But now I want to ask you, Tom, when you're in a game that's heading towards a no-hitter, I know you umpired a combined no-hitter for the Pittsburgh Pirates against Houston. And when you have something like this on the line, I remember Milt Pappas. I don't know if you've heard that story. Milt Pappas on the Cubs had a perfect game. And he lost it in the ninth inning over a close call by Bruce Fremming. And what does it feel like to have that responsibility?
Well, you know, it's part of your job, so it's actually kind of exciting. I would think every umpire wants to have that opportunity at least once in their career to have that on the line and the pressure and all of that. And you just really have to focus, bear down, and take your time, because you don't want to miss a pitch that would cause it to go the wrong way. And so you don't do anything different. You just really focus in on that pitch and take your time and make sure that you get that call right.
Right. The very good way to look at it. We have seen clips in the past, Tom, of the more vociferous guys. We'll call them vociferous. Earl Weaver, Lou Piniella. And I want to ask you if you have any good stories about anybody like that you can tell us.
I'm sure I do. That's always the hardest part. People will ask you, you know, well, who is the worst guy that ever did this or, you know, did that? But anyhow, Lou was kind of when he was in the National League, he was kind of our Earl Weaver of back in the day with the American League.
Yeah.
And I remember Dutch Rennert had first base, and there was a ball. It was like the eighth or ninth inning, but there was a ball hit by the visiting team down the right field line, close to whether it was fair or foul. Dutch called it a fair ball home run. Well, the Cincinnati went up for grabs. The house was coming down, and you know, Lou came out, and he was putting on his whole routine, and you know, he picked up the base, threw the base, and then he was heading back to the dugout, and I remember this, that the clubhouse attendant up in Cincinnati, who had been there for years, his son was helping him in the clubhouse. Well, he came running up the stairs in the dugout and told Lou, it was foul, it was foul. And so here comes Lou again, and he goes to second, grabs second base and throws that. And, you know, we had, you know, it probably was you know, one of the all-time arguments for a home run, fair or foul. And then I was working with Joe West in Chicago. It was a night game, and Andre Dawson got called out by Joe working the plate, and he called him out on strike three. And Andre didn't – I think he got called out like the inning before that or two innings before that, and he didn't like that neither. But he went in the dugout, threw out bats, and I mean, we had another – the place was going up for grabs, and what happened was they started throwing all the beer onto the field. So we had probably a 20-minute delay in the game just by, you know, the ushers had to pick up all the debris that was on the thing. So we're kind of, you're kind of standing there and you don't want to go near the dugout because, you know, you already had a shit house and, you know, the dugout was lighting up the field, but, you all kind of huddled around home plate, kind of stay there until you could start the game again. But, that was one that I always will remember.
Well, be thankful, Tom, you weren't a disco demolition night or anything like that back in the 70s. that must have been. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, of course, you know, we're in New York, Tom. And I'm a Met fan. So I, of course, am going to ask you about the famous discussion that you had with Terry Collins. Now, did you know the background of the situation there that precipitated Noah Syndergaard throwing behind Utley?
Yes.
Okay.
We were aware of that. And it's funny. I just did Terry's show.
I heard. I heard that. Yeah.
So that was the first time that I got to talk to Terry about the whole evening and everything. So that was fun. It was enjoyable. But yeah, we knew what had happened, and I didn't think that it would blow up like it did. But you know, that's baseball. You just never know when something's going to happen and how it's going to go. And I like I said on Terry's show, I said, you know, I know when you left home plate and Dave Roberts left home plate and you shook hands and said, okay, it's all over. Don't worry about anything. I knew it wasn't over. I knew something was coming. But Noah was, you know, and he was the guy that should have thrown at Utley because, you know, he was their big stud and
throws hard,
100 miles an hour and he's 6'4", 6'5", whatever he was. So, you know what? You want to come out and fight me? Go ahead. Let's go.
Yeah, like he during the World Series, I think it was back in 15, he told the guy, I'm 60 feet, 6 inches away. You know where I am, you know?
Yeah. But, he was a hard, you know, he was a hard-nosed guy. And that's, you know, there was no doubt Noah was sending a message.
Right.
And when Terry was yelling at me saying, you got to give us a shot, I said to him, you just had your shot. He should have hit him. That would have made it,
right.
That would have made it easy.
Right. Yeah. I just think, Tom, that Noah shouldn't have got run until both benches were worn. That's my opinion. But I don't expect you to come out and give a judgment on that. But that folks, you can Google that, folks. It's out on YouTube with Tom Hallion and Terry Collins because fortunately or unfortunately, there was a live mic that night, so you can hear everything that's happening. Now, the new rules, Tom. What do you think about the new school of umpiring with the pitch clock, the larger bases, etc.?
The only thing I can tell you is that I'm old school.
Mm-hmm.
I was a traditionalist. And I think the only thing that I would say has really helped baseball is the pitch clock because that got everybody on the same page. And it's a little bit quicker of a game now. You don't have the dead time and all of that. So I think that's good for the game. The bases, I don't know what the purpose of that is, really, to be honest with you.
No, I know. Having a pizza box out there really doesn't accomplish anything, you know? It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it's so, you know, again, as a traditionalist, old school, yeah, I like the game the way it was. It survived for, you know, 100 years the way it was.
Right.
I don't know why we had to change all these things. So
I agree.
But that does happen. Things do change, but I certainly was not a fan of that happening.
Have you seen a minor league game where they have the automatic strike zone?
I have not.
Okay.
So that's different.
That is wild. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard about it, but I have not seen a game. And I don't know. People ask me, you know, what do I think is going to happen with the ABS system, and I think there's going to be some form of it. I think you'll have the umpire calling pitches, but then you'll have a challenge where the catcher, the batter, or the pitcher can challenge the call, and you'll get, say 5 challenges a game. And then when they challenge, you'll see it come up on the big screen out in center field, the scoreboard. They'll show the box. They'll show the pitch. And if it's called correctly, then the count stays the same. If it's called incorrectly, then the count goes to the other, if it was 1 ball, 2 strikes, and he called it wrong, then it's 2 balls, 2 strikes. That's what they'll do.
I agree, Tom. Well, Tom Hallion's been with us tonight on Sports Talk New York. Tom, thanks for spending time with us up here on Long Island. I really appreciate it, and we wish you and Betsy the best of luck down there in Kentucky.
Well, thank you, and we have a big event coming. We have actually this year we have 2 big events.
Go ahead,
the Kentucky Derby, and we got the PGA golf tournament. So we have a busy year this year.
You like that, though? That would be good, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
I'll be out. So if you see me walking around somewhere, I'll be out there.
Just give the strikeout call. We'll know it's you.
There you go.
All right. Thanks again, Tom Hallion, folks.
All right. Have a good night.
You too, Tom. That'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk New York. I'd like to thank my guests, Senator Bill Bradley and umpire Tom Hallion. I'd like to thank my engineer, Brian Graves, and, of course, you guys for joining us. See you next Sunday evening, April 21st. Till then, be safe, be well. Bill Donahue wishing you a good evening, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.